Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Governor Ron DeSantis wades into the debate over a transgender swimmer. The so-called Don't Say Gay bill generates more dysfunction among Florida Democrats, and talk of lawmakers returning to Tallahassee for a special legislative session. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, gentlemen, did you bring some numbers with you this week? How about you, John?
Zach, I do have a number this week, and it's a robust 23.
All right. How about you, Antonio?
An even more robust 19 billion.
19 billion. There's a big gulf between those two. I'm closer to John this week with a 49. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, there was big news in the sports world last week when transgender swimmer Leah Thomas won the women's collegiate championship in the 500-yard freestyle event, becoming the first transgender athlete to win a Division I college title. Thomas defeated Emma Wyant, a swimmer who grew up in Florida. That prompted Governor Ron DeSantis to weigh in, declaring Wyant the rightful winner. John, the governor pushed a bill last year that banned transgender athletes from competing in women's sports in Florida. So I guess it's not really surprising he would pounce on this issue, right?
Yeah. The governor was behind that bill last year that enacted the ban. And now that law is being challenged as unconstitutional in federal court. But oddly enough, the lawsuit has been put on hold, awaiting a ruling from a federal appeals court on another lawsuit that looks at whether a transgender student should have been allowed to use the boys' high school bathroom at Nice High School in Ponte Vedra Beach near Jacksonville. So the issues are clanging together, it seems like, when it comes to transgender issues in the court. But DeSantis was a part of this wave of Republican-led states which weighed in against allowing transgender girls to compete. And while at the same time he seemed to be capitalizing on an issue which was largely drummed up by conservative media at that time, a year ago, as you pointed out, Zach, Leah Thomas's success swimming for the University of Pennsylvania in first Ivy League competition and later in the NCAA swim championships, that seems to have really heightened the attention on this issue.
So you bring up a really interesting point, because I remember when that bill was going forward and a lot of people were saying, this is unnecessary. You know, there's not, these athletes aren't really out there. There's, you know, you're tackling a problem that doesn't exist, but it really has come forward in a big way with Leah Thomas. I mean, when you're winning a Division I collegiate title in swimming, this all of a sudden has become a very prominent issue. And I think a lot of people are sort of even on the left are sort of unsure about how to react to this.
Yeah, that's true. When you mentioned about last year, it is, I went back and looked, I had some vague memory of how Democratic Congressman Charlie Crist, now, you know, he's DeSantis's rival for governor this year, one of them on the Democratic side. He seemed to express the view of many opponents last year. He called it cruel legislation that was focused on creating an issue where one doesn't exist. So, you know, obviously times have changed. The attention captured by Leah Thomas does seem to make it an issue that indeed does exist now. Now, we have seen the NCAA Board of Governors in January voted in support of a sport-by-sport approach to transgender participation that it said was aimed at trying to preserve opportunity for transgender student-athletes while balancing fairness for all who compete. And then only a month later, USA Swimming, they unveiled a new policy to allow transgender athletes to compete. But they said they were going to be taking steps to make sure that prior physical development of the athlete as a male does not give an unfair advantage. And also, they're going to be testing testosterone levels that they had to be at a very low level. Now, you know, DeSantis doesn't give that much credence, though. He said the NCAA is making a mockery of its championships. So there, the Florida governor unilaterally declares his own NCAA champion. I don't know, maybe that adds to the mockery that he's condemning. But It's certainly an evolving area of athletics. And as you pointed out, I think the public may be divided on it. I would think that there's maybe quite a strong level of tolerance among people for, you know, a transgender girl who wants to play on her middle school girls soccer team. The girl who is suing Florida was an eighth grade goalie last year and backed by the Human Rights Campaign, a national LGBTQ rights organization. But when it's an NCAA championship won by a transgender woman who competed as a man during the 3 years previously, that may be a tougher case for the public to endorse. And it really has divided the athletic community as well. But DeSantis's blanket ban that he enacted last year on the first day of LGBTQ Pride Month, in what seemed to be an apparent taunt, the ban doesn't draw any kind of distinction. Like he was on school masks, COVID vaccines for kids, and Black Lives Matter demonstrations, DeSantis is pushing a prohibition of some kind of activity, some kind of, in this case, transgender girl athletes. And there's nothing subtle about his ban. And there was nothing subtle about him weighing into the topic this week.
Yeah. And from a politics standpoint, it's pretty interesting that he found a way to sort of inject himself in this. Obviously, this proclamation doesn't mean anything. The governor can't declare a collegiate champion in swimming. But, you know, it was enough of sort of a formal move that he was able to get quite a bit of attention. And it's obviously an issue that, you know, he thinks is a winning one for him. And he's continuing to focus on it. Well, issues of gender and sexuality factor into another Florida political controversy this week when the LGBTQ caucus of the Florida Democrats slammed the party for scheduling its big annual fundraiser at a Disney resort after Disney was criticized for a tepid response to the so-called Don't Say Gay bill. After the caucus announced a boycott of the fundraiser, Democratic leaders retreated and announced they are moving the event. Antonio, Democrats are united in opposition to the Don't Say Gay bill, but somehow found a way to trip themselves up on this issue.
Yeah, Zach, and I noted that in your story on this debacle this week, the Florida Democratic Party chair, Manny Diaz, said that in the fight for freedom and fairness, quote unquote, we can always do more. Well, that sounded eerily similar to Disney CEO Bob Chapek's "we, quote unquote, missed the mark" mea culpa in the company's relative silence on the Don't Say Gay bill. So what happened? Well, while the rest of Florida was watching the fight between Disney and DeSantis, it apparently didn't occur to Florida Democrats to hit reverse and quietly and discreetly back out of a plan to hold their leadership blue fundraiser workshop and political pep rally this coming June at Disney's Coronado Springs Resort. Look, in fairness, one Democratic operative told me that the party kind of found itself stuck in an awkward spot this week. You know, they need to support the LGBTQ plus caucus, but we're also trying to cultivate a deeper, more financially fruitful tie with Disney. Still, after public shaming by the Democrats' LGBTQ plus caucus, party leaders realized the mistake of holding their event at the Disney resort, even as Disney and its executive team were under fire from even their own employees for not having forcefully opposed the Don't Say Gay bill. So it's been viewed as a flop by Florida's Democratic Party, also because they unwillingly gave up the moral high ground on an issue that isn't just paramount to the Democratic base, but to lots of Floridians as well. In the process, conventional wisdom is they elbowed DeSantis out of a glaring heat lamp and placed themselves in the glare of public attention. And they did it just as DeSantis was under growing scrutiny in a really public fight with Disney, which is only one of the planet's most beloved brands. In fact, in Florida, you can even say that, you know, Disney is even more popular than among consumers and even Publix. Now, Democrats ended up publicly embarrassing Disney, which they need as an ally, by making the entire episode a public spectacle instead of, you know, quietly having backed out. Now, the question for Democrats is how will they tap the opposition that has grown over the Don't Say Gay bill and seize the messaging on the fight between Disney and DeSantis? DeSantis is messaging it as a parental rights issue. So can Democrats make it about unnecessary Big Brother government intrusion? The reality is that sex education and sex identity curriculum does not exist in kindergarten through third grade in Florida public schools. And this legislation, critics have vociferously argued, is a mean-spirited attempt to whip up the base by scapegoating the LGBTQ plus community, including with insulting rhetoric. Now, one of my colleagues at the Post, Chris Versailles, just wrote an interesting story about how the unpopular red meat legislation out of this year's session, including the ban on abortions after 15 weeks and clamping down on businesses' ability to deal with a diverse workforce in a diverse state, may open a channel for Democrats to compete this fall. But this flub over leadership blue doesn't inspire confidence.
And Antonio, you make an interesting point that, you know, Democrats are trying to sort of tighten their relationship with Disney, which is a huge, you know, and very deep pocketed corporation in Florida. And this bill really kind of messes that up. Does this sort of show how, you know, how entwined Disney and some of these other corporations are within the political parties in Florida? It was really interesting to see DeSantis come out and attack Disney, because it's like really almost unprecedented for a Republican leader to go after a major company that is so, and you know, so identified with the state of Florida and has given so much in campaign contributions. This sort of really shows the relationship that these companies have with the parties. You know, the fact that people were so surprised about that just shows that, you know, everybody just sort of assumed that, you know, Republicans wouldn't want to tangle with Disney, and Democrats don't really seem to want to tangle with Disney either. They've been sort of shamed into it by the LGBTQ caucus, but it just kind of shows the complications that come when you tie yourself so closely to some of these corporations, right?
It does. But, you know, the thing about it is that Disney, if you're DeSantis and Republicans, you almost feel you got torpedoed by Disney. I mean, they're doling out close to $600 million in incentives so that Disney can relocate 2,000 workers from California to this community outside Orlando. So here, I mean, you can almost see where DeSantis and Republicans think, wait a minute, we're giving you hundreds of millions of dollars. We made paved the way for hundreds of millions of dollars in incentives to set up some operations here. And now you're going to go woke on us? It just, you're right. I mean, this just basically points out and puts a spotlight on these very complicated dealings between politics and business in the state of Florida, which is now one of the third most populous states in the country, and doesn't have that many Fortune 500 big corporations. So, you know, if you're a Disney, if you're a Universal, if you're some of these big companies, you know, you're giving money to candidates to pursue public policy initiatives that are in your best financial interest. At the same time, man, you're putting yourself into the political arena, and that's what happened with Disney.
Yeah, I find this story so interesting. I just think it says a lot about some of the subtext in Florida politics, and it's fascinating to see a company like Disney get caught up in all of this. Well, the Don't Say Gay bill is among the many pieces of legislation that DeSantis has yet to sign from the 60-day legislative session that wrapped up this month. But already there's talk of another session to handle unfinished business, including a legislative response to the Surfside condo collapse and the state's failing in property insurance market. John, I don't know if this is just a lot of talk. I mean, there's been a discussion about, especially from the left, about how lawmakers left a lot of important issues on the table while they were fighting over some of these culture war things. You know, I don't know if the lawmakers feel a little bit pressure because of that, because there's, you know, obviously the state's property insurance market is kind of getting out of control, and Surfside was such a major issue. It sounds like DeSantis and some of the legislative leaders have sort of nodded to the being open to a special session, but I'm not sure if anybody wants to fully commit to that.
Yeah, I think prospects for a special session may be kind of remote, even though, yeah, as you point out, Zach, this is the time of year that it's easy to point to issues left undone during session. And you mentioned a couple of the more prominent issues, the condominium safety legislation that seemed certain to happen after the tragedy of Surfside last year, and efforts to stabilize the property insurance market, which is costing Floridians, as a number of insurers have stopped writing policies in Florida. And hurricane season is right around the corner again. There's even a push from the right. Controversial state house member Anthony Sabatini wants a special session to pass what he was sponsoring that never really got much attention, was an open carry for guns legislation. He's squawking about that they should be back in session for that. But, you know, part of it is the reason these issues don't get done was because there was no consensus. And speaking of DeSantis, the governor doesn't look willing to step in and lead on these issues by coming up with a potential answer or, you know, middle ground and trying to get legislators behind it. He has said that he's leaving it to lawmakers to figure out. And well, you know, they couldn't figure it out during the 61-day legislative session, and they're showing no signs of feeling compelled to do so on their own now. So I don't think anyone is going to advise trying to come back for these topics when there is no you know, prospect of a consensus being built. I think there's a feeling they'll just roll the dice for another year and just hope that condo safety doesn't come into the news again, and that the property insurance changes that they enacted last year may actually have some positive effect on the troubled market, which definitely seems to be the view of House Speaker Chris Sprouls, who has repeatedly said that last year's legislation needs time to work. What DeSantis is focused on, though, which indeed could lead to a special session, is congressional redistricting. The governor says he'll veto the map that's approved by the House and Senate, which made it likely that Florida again will elect four Black Democratic members of Congress. That is something that the governor seems intent on reducing by half so that more Republicans could be elected from Florida. But at this point, it seems that the governor's case is really more one that he will attempt to make in court. And I think even his fellow Republican leaders in the legislature see it that way. So if he does indeed veto the congressional plan, like he said he will, I think there's a good chance that lawmakers will say that they and the governor are at impasse and that the matter should be settled either in state or federal court, where lawsuits have already been filed. So while, you know, redistricting appears to be the topic that could most likely force a special session, since congressional boundaries, they have to be finalized in time for June candidate qualifying, I don't think even that's going to force the special session that we're talking about. So really, in an election year, no incumbents want to waste time coming back to Tallahassee debating policy matters. They want to get out and campaign and fundraise. And my hunch is that's just what they're going to be doing from now on, not coming back to Tallahassee.
John, so you don't really see a huge appetite from DeSantis to sort of lead on the Surfside issue or the property insurance issue. I mean, let's be honest, these are kind of arcane policy issues for most people. Yeah. I mean, property insurance stuff, condo laws, a lot of competing interests. It gets pretty in the weeds. Governor hasn't really delved into that.
No, it's not a thing that he is focused on right now. And as you say, it's dense. It's hard to say who's going to win here. It has a conflict on both sides. Where on the condominium legislation, there were questions about, you know, how much money you can require a homeowners association to keep on hand in the event of, you know, maintenance needed, like, you know, was so exposed in the Surfside collapse. It's one of those kind of issues that there's almost no winner. And I think at this point, DeSantis doesn't want to get on something that's just going to rile up any kind of voting base.
They're tough issues to really to solve. I mean, if they were easy to solve, it would have happened by now. But they do affect a lot of people, and they're hitting them in the pocketbooks in a big way and raising questions about safety. So I guess we'll see where they go. Well, we'll move on to our numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about your billions?
Yes, sir. I got $19 billion, as in $19 billion, and that is the amount of money that Florida stands to gain from the Biden administration and congressional Democrats' infrastructure bill. And to drive home that point that it was Democrats who got infrastructure done, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi came to Palm Beach last weekend. She visited the site of the busted George Bush Boulevard Bridge in Delray Beach, which is stuck in an upright position. The bridge malfunctioned on March 3rd and has created all sorts of traffic headaches and snarls in the coastal city. Even worse, it's likely the bridge won't be operable until May. Now, the $250 million the state will get for bridges from the infrastructure funding, Pelosi and local House Democrats said, may help pay for what is likely to be a pricey fix for the bridge. Surely, Pelosi's victory lap in Palm Beach County was sweet, given that up the road at Mar-a-Lago, former President Donald Trump talked a lot about infrastructure during his 4 years in office, but never got a deal done. But Democrats will tell you, and they'll tell you often, that they did get it done. Now, while she was here, Palm Beach Post reporter Gerard Albert who covered the event, was able to ask Pelosi about her party's apparent long odds in their effort to keep control of the U.S. House in this year's midterm elections. Pelosi, by the way, didn't really care for the question and made her displeasure known to Girard. But Girard persisted, and Pelosi emphatically then said that she and Capitol Hill Democrats have no intention of losing control of the chamber in this year's election. Nonetheless, Florida congressional Democrats have an uphill fight in Florida. They have to retain four seats being vacated by either retiring incumbent Democrats or members who are seeking other office. They have struggled to find well-known and deep-pocketed candidates for two seats in Miami-Dade that they held until the 2020 election. And now U.S. Representative Frederica Wilson, a Democrat from Miami Gardens, faces a tough primary opponent. Yes, okay, that's a seat Democrats will keep. But it still draws attention to the fact that Democrats feel they have a better chance of beating themselves in the GOP in Miami-Dade. Pelosi didn't like the question, but probably it's because she doesn't really like the reality behind it.
Democrats seem pretty eager to tout this infrastructure money. We'll see if voters really are paying that close attention. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, 23 is for House District 23, which Representative Ralph Masullo is running for re-election in after Governor Ron DeSantis basically ended Masullo's million-dollar dream of running for Senate by taking the unusual step for a Florida Republican governor. He endorsed one of Masullo's Republican rivals. That was Representative Blazin Golia. Leaders usually stay out of these kind of intra-party primaries, but not DeSantis. He endorsed Golia for the Senate District 11 that is going to be an open seat with incumbent Senate President Wilton Simpson, not only term limited, but he's running for state agriculture commissioner. But the Masullo-Golia matchup was being watched because it pitted two major Republican incumbents against each other for the Senate seat, but not anymore. Masullo is a Citrus County dermatologist and one of the wealthiest members of the legislature, and he'd already loaned his Senate campaign $1.5 million. So he was in it, and he was in it in a big way. But Golia is a former Republican Party state chairman who, you know, now obviously is closer to DeSantis. He had sponsored DeSantis's big elections overhaul package last year that was just recently the subject of a federal trial whose outcome we're still waiting to see if the law is indeed deemed unconstitutional. Several advocacy groups have said that it discriminates against Black voters with its changes to drop boxes, mail-in balloting, and organizations that help enroll voters. But DeSantis, via a tweet, endorsed Golia near the end of the legislative session. And if that sounds familiar, listeners will recall that DeSantis himself was the beneficiary of a tweet endorsement from then-President Donald Trump in 2018 on his way to upsetting a well-financed, favored Republican primary rival in the race for governor. That was then-Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. So, you know, if you need another example of how Trump is a political mentor to Ron DeSantis, maybe his use of tweet endorsements is the latest example of how there's a nothing new under the sun. And Florida under DeSantis has become a state where Trump-like tactics are part of the governor's playbook. Masullo, for his part, is he's retreating back to run for re-election to the House from District 23. He's looking to serve Citrus County again, but not from the state Senate. Now, DeSantis's tweet didn't just dash Masullo's hopes, though. There were six other candidates who'd already put their name in for what they thought was going to be Masullo's open seat. But at least one quickly dropped out when Masullo did his backflip this week, and when he became a House candidate again. And more of those candidates are expected to end their campaign now that Masullo wants back in. And he's able to spend that $1.5 million maybe on a House race. So we'll see if whether DeSantis is going to continue being a kingmaker. Election 2022 is only getting started, and the governor seems to feel, you know, he's operating from a position of real influence. Like Trump, he's got Republicans believing in his power. So we might see him active in this primary season.
DeSantis flexing in a state Senate primary. It'll be interesting to see if he can sort of reshape the legislature if he gets reelected next year, this year, and then wants to pass some policies that could help him a lot. I mean, the legislature's been, they've been pretty deferential to him, right, John? But I guess he wants even more deference.
Even more deference, have more people that have a certain obligation to him because they won his endorsement back in campaign season.
Yeah, so that could help him pass some legislation that could benefit a run for president in 2024. We'll see. My number is 49, as in 49% of Florida voters opposed the so-called Don't Say Gay bill that Governor Ron DeSantis has been promoting, and only 40% are in favor of the legislation, according to a University of North Florida survey. I think it's worth sort of taking a look at polling on this bill as DeSantis prepares to sign it, because some political observers believe that the governor is losing the messaging war on this bill. There have been signs that he's really not as sure-footed on this issue as some of the other culture war battles that he has waged. The governor's supporters argue that the bill is popular when people look at the actual language, but this "Don't Say Gay" catchphrase has really stuck, and it's really sort of activated a lot of opposition to this bill. And the governor's team has really reacted to that and pushed back hard against that and said that language is not in the bill. It has become really part of the public narrative around the bill. So it's worth kind of looking at whether that sort of moved the needle in terms of public opinion on the bill. And it's not really clear from the polling at this point, which has been mixed. The bill prohibits teaching students in kindergarten through third grade about gender identity and sexual orientation. The UNF survey that I just referenced asked about that language and again found that only 40% of Florida voters support it. And there was an ABC News Ipsos survey that found only 37% of voters nationwide support the language that is in that bill, and 62% actually oppose it. Conversely, though, a Politico Morning Consult poll found a slim majority of voters nationwide, 51%, do support the language in the bill. And there was a really intriguing poll that was released this week that found a significant number of Florida Democrats, that's right, Democrats, support the language in the legislation, with 52% of Democratic primary voters in Florida saying they either somewhat or definitely opposed to teaching about sexual orientation in kindergarten through third grade. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting. I mean, if even some a majority of Democrats raised concerns about this. So, I mean, the polling is not very clear on this bill right now. The bottom line, I think, is that the jury is still kind of out on how this bill will impact the governor in the court of public opinion. It's not really clear that it's a slam dunk, and it could even be a net negative for him. And I sort of suspect that the how that legislation is framed, and whether, you know, things like the "Don't Say Gay" catchphrase continue to be really closely associated with the bill will impact how people view the bill. And that's one reason the governor's supporters seem so eager to push back against that label. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be taking a week off, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Inside Florida Politics. Till then, we're out of here.